hadn't he been halfway across the sea? Why hadn't he been, well, Boz? Despite the warm bath water, goose flesh rose on my skin. Could he have come back for me? Hope and despair warred in my chest, equally hideous, but panic soon conquered them both. You have to let me see him.
That's out of the question. Please!
I loathed the word, but if he refused, if pleading didn't work, I'd have only one option. Magic outside the infirmary was a huge risk, but it was one I'd have to take. Because Boz knew about Coco, yes, but he also knew about me. I wondered how much information on two witches was worth. His life? His prison sentence? A fair trade in the eye of the chasseurs, and one Boz was sure to make. Even if he had come back for me, he wouldn't hesitate with his life in the balance. I cursed myself for confiding in him. I'd known his character. I'd known who he was. Yet still, I'd allowed myself to relax, to spill my deepest secrets. Well, one of them anyway. And now I would pay the price, as would Coco. Stupid. So stupid. Please, I repeated. My husband blinked at the word, clearly stunned, but his shock soon gave way to suspicion. He scowled.
Why are you so concerned about him?
He's a friend. I didn't care that my voice sounded desperate. A dear friend.
Of course he is.
At my pained expression, he glared at the ceiling and added, almost reluctantly,
He'll have a chance to save himself.
How so? Though I already knew the answer, I held my breath, dreading his next words.
The witch is still our priority, he confirmed. If he gives us information that leads to its capture, his sentence will be reevaluated.
I clutched the edge of the tub for support, forcing myself to remain calm. My other hand rose to stroke the scar at my throat, an instinctive, agitated gesture. After a long moment, his voice drifted toward me on a whisper.
Are you well? You look pale.
When I didn't answer, he strode across the room and crouched beside the tub. I didn't care that the bubbles were thinning. Apparently, neither did he. He reached out and touched a strand of hair by my ear. Soap came away on his fingers.
You missed a spot.
I said nothing as he pooled water on his palm and let it trickle down my hair, but my breath caught when his fingers hovered above my throat.
How did you get this one? He murmured.
Swallowing hard, I searched for a lie and found none. That's a story for another day, Shus. He leaned back on his heels, blue eyes searching my face. I covered the scar instinctively and stared at my reflection in the soapy water. After everything I'd been through, after everything I'd endured, I would not burn for Boz. I was no one's sacrifice. Not then, not now, not ever. There was only one thing to do. I would have to save him. My husband left me a few moments later to return to the council room. Vaulting from the tub, I hastened to find the candle I'd hidden within the linen cupboard. I'd nicked it from the sanctuary during Ansel's tour yesterday. With quick, practiced movements, I lit the wax and set it on the desk. Herbal smoke immediately overpowered the room, and I sighed in relief. The smell wasn't quite right, but it was close enough. By the time he returned, the magic would have faded. Hopefully. After pacing the room frenetically for several long minutes, I forced myself to sit on the bed, waited impatiently for Ansel to return. He was young, easily turned perhaps. At least that's what I told myself. After an eternity and a day, he knocked on the door. Come in! He walked into the room warily, eyes darting to the washroom. Clearly checking to make sure I was properly clothed. I stood and took a deep breath, steeling myself for what was to come. I only hoped Ansel wasn't wearing his Belisarda. Smiling coyly, I locked eyes with him as he stepped farther into the room. My skin tingled in anticipation. I missed you. He blinked at my strange voice, brows furrowing. Sauntering closer, I placed a hand on his forearm. He made to jerk away, but paused at the last second. He blinked again. I drew up against his chest and drank in his scent, his essence. My skin shone against the pale blue of his coat. We gazed at the glow together, lips parting. "So strong," I breathed. The words flowed deep and resonant from my lips. "So worthy. They have made a mistake in underestimating you." A range of emotions flitted across his face at my words, at my touch. Confusion, panic, desire. I trailed a finger down his cheek. He didn't lean away from the contact. "I see the greatness in you, Ansel. You will kill many witches." His eyelashes fluttered softly, and then nothing. He was mine. I wrapped my arms around his narrow waist, glowing all the brighter. "Will you help me?" He nodded, eyes wide as he stared down at me. I kissed his palm and closed my eyes, breathing deeply. "Thank you, Ansel." The rest was easy. I allowed him to lead me to the dungeon. Instead of proceeding down the narrow stairwell to the council room, however, we veered right to the cells where they held Boz. The chasseurs, my husband included, still questioned Madame Labelle, and only two guards stood outside the cells. They wore pale blue coats like Ansel. They turned to us in bewilderment as we approached, their hands immediately reaching for weapons, but not Belisarda's. I smiled as shimmering gold patterns materialized between us. They thought they were safe inside their tower. So foolish. So careless. Catching at a web of patterns, I clenched my fists and sighed as my affectionate memories of Boz, the love I'd once felt, the warmth he'd once brought me, slipped into oblivion. The guards crumpled to the floor, and the cords disappeared in a burst of shimmering dust. "Memory for memory," the voice in my head crooned. "A worthy price. It is better this way." Boz's eyes shone triumphant as he beheld me. I drifted closer to the cell, tilting my head to the side as I examined him. They'd shaved his head and stubble in prison to prevent lice. It didn't suit him.
"Lou!"
He clenched the bars and pressed his face between them. Panic flared in his eyes.
"Thank God you're here. My cousin tried to bond me out, but they wouldn't listen. They're going to hang me, Lou, if I don't tell them about Coco."
He broke off, true fear distorting his features at the distant, otherworldly look on my face. My skin glowed brighter. Ansel dropped to his knees behind me.
"What are you doing?"
Boz ground his palms against his eyes in an attempt to fight off the charm emanating from me.
"Don't do this. I'm sorry I left you at Tremblay's. You know I'm not as brave or as clever as you and Coco. It was wrong of me. I should have stayed. I should have helped."
A shudder racked his body as I drew closer, and I smiled, small and cold.
"Lou, please," he begged.
Another shudder, stronger this time.
"I wouldn't have told them anything about you. You know that. No, please don't."
His shoulders drooped, and when his hands fell to his sides once more, his face was blissfully blank.
"So clever, Boz. So cunning. You always had such pretty words."
I cupped his face through the cell door.
"I'm going to give you something, Boz. And in return, you are going to give something to me. How does that sound?"
He nodded and smiled. I leaned closer and kissed his lips, tasted his breath. He sighed in contentment.
"I am going to free you. All I ask for in return are your memories."
I tightened my fingers on his cheek, on the gold swirling around his handsome face. He didn't struggle as my fingernails bit into his skin, pricked the tiny silver scar on his jaw. I wondered briefly how he'd gotten it. When I finished, when the golden mist had stolen every memory of my face and Coco's from his mind, Boz fell to the floor. His face bled due to my nails, but otherwise he would recover. I bent to retrieve the keys from the guard's belt and dropped them beside him. Then I turned to Ansel. Your turn, precious. I knelt next to him and wrapped my hands around his shoulders, brushing my lips against his cheek. This might hurt a little. Concentrating on the scene before us, I stole the memory from Ansel's mind. It took only a few seconds before he too fell to the floor. I struggled to remain conscious, but black seeped into the edges of my vision as I repeated the process on the guards. I had to pay the price. I had taken, and now I must give. Nature demanded balance. Swaying slightly, I toppled over Ansel and surrendered to the darkness. I blinked awake a short time later. My head throbbed, but I ignored it, climbing hastily to my feet. The cell door was open and Boz was gone. Ansel, however, showed no signs of stirring. I bit my lip, deliberating. He'd be punished if found outside a prisoner's empty cell, especially with two guards unconscious at his feet. Worse, he'd have no memory of how he'd gotten there, and no way to defend himself. Scowling, I massaged my temples and tried to formulate a plan. I needed to hurry, needed to somehow wash the smell of magic from my skin before the chasseurs caught up to me. But I couldn't just leave him. Seeing no alternative, I hoisted him up beneath his armpits and dragged him away. We'd only made it a few paces when my knees began to buckle. He was heavier than he looked. Angry voices reached me when I neared the staircase. Though Ansel was finally beginning to stir, I wasn't strong enough to haul him up each step. The voices grew louder. Cursing silently, I pushed him through the first door I saw and edged it shut behind us. My breath left me in a relieved whoosh when I straightened and looked around. A library. We were in a library. Small and unadorned, like everything else in this wretched place, but still a library. Footsteps stormed up and down the corridor, and more voices added to the cacophony.
He's gone! Search the tower!
But the library door remained miraculously closed. Praying it would remain that way, I heaved Ansel into one of the reading chairs. He blinked at me, his eyes struggling to focus, before slurring,
Where are we?
The library. I threw myself into the chair next to him and pulled a book at random from the shelf. 12 Treatises of Occult Extermination. Of course. My hands shook with the effort not to rip the hideous pages from their binding. We were just in the infirmary with Father Orville and Mademoiselle Perrault. You brought me down here to... I tossed 12 treatises on the nearest table and reached for the leather-bound Bible beside it. To educate me. That's it.
What?
I groaned as the door burst open and my husband and Jean-Luc pounded in.
It was you, wasn't it?
Jean-Luc advanced toward me with murder in his eyes. My husband stepped forward, but Ansel was already there. He swayed slightly on his feet, but his eyes sharpened at Jean-Luc's approach.
What are you talking about? What's happened? The prisoner escaped, Jean-Luc snarled.
Beside him, my husband stilled, his nostrils flaring. Shit, the smell. It still clung to Ansel and me like a second skin, trailing from the empty cell straight to us.
His cell is empty. The guards were knocked unconscious.
I was doomed. Good and truly doomed this time. Gripping the Bible tighter to keep my hands from trembling, I met each of their gazes with forced calm. At least the chasseurs would burn me. Not a drop of my blood would be spilled. I savored that small victory. My husband watched me through narrowed eyes.
What is that smell?
More footsteps thudded outside, and Coco skidded into the room before I could answer. A fresh wave of sickly sweet air washed over us at her arrival, and my heart lodged firmly in my throat.
I overheard the priests talking about the prisoner's escape.
Her breath came out in short pants, and she clutched her side. When her eyes found mine, however, she nodded reassuringly and straightened, ensuring her white healer's robe still covered every inch of her skin.
I came to see if I could help.
Jean-Luc's nose wrinkled in distaste at the reek emanating from her.
Who are you?
Abri Perrault.
She swept into a curtsy, rapidly regaining her composure.
I'm the new healer in the infirmary.
He frowned, unconvinced.
Then you know healers aren't allowed free rein of the tower. You shouldn't be down here, especially with a prisoner roaming free.
Coco skewed him with a pointed look before appealing to my husband instead.
Captain Diggory, your wife accompanied me earlier while I read the patient's proverbs. Ansel escorted her. Isn't that right, Ansel?
God, she was brilliant. Ansel blinked at us, confusion clouding his eyes once more.
Yes.
He frowned and shook his head, obviously trying to account for the gap in his memories.
You took a bath, but we did go to the infirmary.
His eyes narrowed in concentration.
I prayed with Father Orville.
I breathed a sigh of relief, hoping Ansel's memory stayed muddled.
He can confirm, my husband asked.
Yes, sir.
Charming. However, that doesn't explain why the cell reeked of magic.
Clearly irritated by Coco's dismissal, Jean-Luc glowered between the three of us.
Or the unconscious guards.
Coco fixed him with a razor-sharp smile.
Unfortunately, I was called away to attend a patient before I could instruct Madame Diggory in washing properly. She and Ansel left shortly after.
My husband's eyes nearly burned my face.
Naturally, you came here instead of returning to our room.
I willed myself to look repentant, returning the Bible to the table. With any luck, we might just be able to survive this mess.
Ansel wanted to teach me some verses, and I went to see him in his cell. Boz.
Fidgeting with a lock of hair, I looked up at him through lowered lashes.
You said he might be hanged, and I wanted to speak with him before. One last time. I'm sorry.
He said nothing, only glared at me.
And the guards? Jean-Luc asked.
I rose and gestured to my small frame.
You really think I could knock two fully grown men unconscious?
My husband's reply came instantaneously.
Yes.
Under different circumstances, I would have been flattered. Now, however, his unwavering faith in my abilities was damnably inconvenient.
They were unconscious when I arrived, I lied, and Boz was already gone. Why didn't you inform us at once? Why flee?
Jean-Luc's pale eyes narrowed, and he stepped forward until I was forced to look up at him to maintain eye contact. I scowled. Fine. If he wanted to intimidate, I could play along. I broke our gaze and looked down at my hands, chin quivering.
I confess I'm sometimes inhibited by the weakness of my sex, monsieur. When I saw Boz had escaped, I panicked. I know it's no excuse.
Good lord.
Rolling his eyes at my tears, Jean-Luc shot an exasperated look at my husband.
You can explain this one to his eminence, captain. I'm sure he'll be delighted by another failure.
He stalked toward the door, dismissing us.
Return to the infirmary, Mademoiselle Perrault, and take care to remember your place in the future. Healers are granted access only to contained locations, the infirmary, its dormitories, and the back stairwell. If you wish to visit any other area of the tower, you're expected to wash and undergo inspection. As you're new to the tower, I'll overlook your misstep this once. But I will be speaking to the priests. I'll ensure we don't repeat this little adventure.
If Coco could have exsanguinated someone, I was sure she would have done it just then. I hastened to intervene.
This is my fault, not hers. Jean-Luc raised a dark brow, inclining his head.
How silly of me. You're right, of course. If you hadn't disobeyed Reed, all of this could have been avoided.
Though I'd asked for the blame, I still bristled at the reproach. Clearly, my husband wasn't the most pompous ass of all the asses. The title unequivocally belonged to Jean-Luc. I'd just opened my mouth to tell him so when my inopportune husband interrupted.
Come here, Ansel.
Ansel swallowed hard and stepped forward, clasping his quaking hands behind his back. Unease flitted through me.
Why did you allow her in the infirmary?
I told you, I invited... Coco started, but she stopped abruptly at the look on my husband's face. Ansel's cheeks tinged pink, and he glanced to me, eyes pleading.
I only took Madame Diggory up there because we have an obligation to those poor souls. The healers are swamped, overworked and understaffed. They hardly have time to tend to the patient's basic needs, let alone nourish their spiritual welfare.
When he remained unconvinced, I added,
Also, I was singing a bawdy song and refused to stop until he took me.
I bared my teeth in an attempt at a smile.
Would you like to hear it? It's about a lovely woman called Big Titty. Enough!
Anger blazed in his eyes, true anger this time. Not humiliation, not irritation. Anger. He looked between the three of us slowly, deliberately.
If I find out any of you are lying, I'll show you no mercy. You'll all be punished to the full extent of the law. Sir, I swear, I told you the infirmary was forbidden.
His voice was hard and unforgiving as he looked at Ansel.
I expected my wife to disobey me. I didn't expect it from you. You're dismissed.
Ansel dropped his head.
Yes, sir.
Outrage washed over me as I watched him shuffle dejectedly to the door. I moved to follow him, yearning to hug him or otherwise console him somehow, but my pig-headed husband caught my arm.
Stay. I'd like a word with you.
I wrenched my arm away and fired up at once.
And I'd like a word with you. How dare you blame Ansel, as if any of this is his fault.
Jean-Luc heaved a long-suffering sigh.
I'll escort you to the infirmary, Mademoiselle Perrault.
He extended his arm to her, clearly bored with the direction the conversation had taken. Her answering glare was withering. Scowling, he turned to leave without her, but Ansel had paused on the threshold, blocking the way. Tears clung to his lashes as he looked back at me, eyes wide, shocked that someone had spoken up for him. Jean-Luc prodded his back impatiently, muttering something I couldn't hear. My blood boiled.
He was charged with watching you.
My husband's eyes blazed, oblivious to everyone but me.
He failed his duty.
Oh, ta gueule! I crossed my arms to keep from wrapping my hands around his throat. I'm a grown-ass woman, and I'm perfectly capable of making my own choices. This is no one's fault but mine. If you're going to bully anyone, it should be me, not Ansel. The poor kid can't catch a break with you. His face nearly purpled.
He isn't a child. He's training to become a chasseur. And if that should happen, he must learn to take responsibility. Ansel, move.
Jean-Luc said flatly, interrupting our tirade. He finally managed to push Ansel through the door.
As entertaining as this is, some of us have work to do. Prisoners to find, witches to burn, those sorts of things. Mademoiselle Perrault, you're expected in the infirmary in 10 minutes. I will be checking.
He gave us both one last irritated look before stomping from the room. Coco rolled her eyes and moved to follow, but she hesitated on the threshold. Her eyes held a silent question.
It's fine, I muttered.
She nodded once, shooting my husband an irritated look of her own, before closing the door behind her. The silence between us was blistering. I half expected the books to catch fire. And it would have been fitting, given every book in this hellish place was evil. I eyed 12 treatises of occult extermination with newfound interest, picking it up as golden patterns shimmered into existence around me. If I hadn't been so furious, I would have startled. It had been a long time since unbidden patterns had appeared in my mind's eye. Already I could feel my magic awakening, desperate for freedom after years of repression. "It would just take a spark," it coaxed. "Relinquish your anger. Set the page aflame." But I didn't want to relinquish my anger. I wanted to throttle my husband with it.
"You lied to us."
His voice cut sharply through the silence. Though I continued staring at the book, I could clearly picture the vein in his throat, the taut muscles of his jaw.
"Madame Labelle told us the witch's name is Cosette Monvoisin, not Alexandra."
"Yes, and she's currently contemplating how to drain all the blood from your body. Perhaps I should help her." Instead, I chucked 12 treatises of occult extermination at his head. "You knew I was a snake when you picked me up." He caught it before it could break his nose, throwing it back at me. I dodged, and it crumpled to the floor where it belonged.
"This isn't a game," he shouted. "We are charged with keeping this kingdom safe. You've seen the infirmary. Witches are dangerous."
My hands curled into fists, and the patterns around me flickered wildly.
"As if chasseurs are any less so.
We're trying to protect you.
Don't ask me to apologize, because I won't."
A ringing started in my ears as I stormed toward him, as I placed both hands on his chest and pushed. When he didn't budge, a snarl tore from my throat.
"I will always protect those who are dear to me. Do you understand? Always."
I pushed him again, harder this time, but his hands caught my own and trapped them against his chest. He leaned down, raising a copper brow.
"Is that so?"
His voice was soft again, dangerous.
"Is that why you helped your lover escape?"
"Lover?" Baffled, I lifted my chin to glare at him.
"I don't know what you're talking about."
"So you deny it then, that he's your lover?"
"I said,"
I repeated, staring pointedly at his hands around mine.
"I don't know what you're talking about. Boz isn't my lover, and he never has been. Now let me go."
To my surprise, he released me, hastily, as if startled he'd been touching me in the first place, and stepped back.
"I can't protect you if you lie to me."
I charged to the door without looking at him.
"Va au diable."
"Go to hell."
Lord, have mercy. Lou. Hushed voices drifted toward us from the sanctuary, and firelight cast shadows on the faces of the icons around us. Yawning, I stared at the one nearest me, a plain woman with a look of supreme boredom on her face. I sympathized.
"I still remember my first attempt. I hit the bullseye straight away."
The Archbishop chuckled, winding up as old men often do when reliving tales of the past.
"Mind you, I was fresh off the street, just turned 7, with not a couronne in my pocket or any experience to my name. Hadn't even held a bow, let alone fired an arrow. The old bishop proclaimed it an act of God."
My husband's lips quirked in response.
"I believe it."
I yawned again. The oratory was stifling, and the wool gown I wore, demure and drab and deliciously warm, didn't help matters. My eyelids drooped. It would be an act of God if I made it through the service without snoring. After the library fiasco, I'd thought it, prudent to accept my husband's invitation to evening mass. Though I didn't know if he believed Ansel's and my story about learning scripture, he'd latched onto the idea, and I'd spent the remainder of the day memorizing verses, the most diabolical of all punishments.
"A continual dropping in a very rainy day and a contentious woman are alike," he'd recited,
eyeing me irritably and waiting for me to repeat the verse, still peeved from our earlier argument. Rain and man are both pains in the ass. He scowled but continued.
Whosoever hideth her hideth the wind and the ointment of his right hand, which bereath itself.
Whoever hideth her, something about ointment in a hand. I waggled my eyebrows devilishly.
Quel risque!
What sort of book is... He'd interrupted before I could further impugn his honor, voice hardening.
Iron sharpeneth iron, so a man sharpeneth the countenance of his friend.
Iron sharpeneth iron, so you're being an ass because I too am a piece of metal. On and on and on it had gone. Honestly, the invitation to Mass had been a welcome reprieve. The Archbishop clasped his shoulder with another hearty chuckle.
I missed the target entirely on my second attempt, of course.
You still did better than me. I took a week to hit the target.
Nonsense!
The Archbishop shook his head, still smiling at the memory.
I distinctly remember your natural talent. Indeed, you were quite a deal more skilled than the other initiates.
The clanging from the bell tower spared me from leaping into the fireplace.
Ah!
Seeming to remember himself, the Archbishop dropped his hand, straightening and rearranging the cloth at his neck.
The service is about to begin. If you'll excuse me, I must join the other attendants.
He paused at the threshold, expression hardening as he turned.
And do remember what we discussed this afternoon, Captain Diggory. A closer eye is necessary.
My husband nodded, cheeks flushing.
Yes, sir.
I rounded on him as soon as the Archbishop left. A closer eye? What the hell does that mean?
Nothing.
Clearing his throat hastily, he extended his arm.
Shall we?
I strode past him into the sanctuary. A closer eye, my ass. Lit by hundreds of candles, the sanctuary of Saint-Cécile looked like something out of a dream. Or a nightmare. Over half the city had gathered in the vast room to hear the Archbishop's sermon. Those wealthy enough to procure seats had dressed in jewel-toned finery, gowns and suits of rich burgundy, amethyst and emerald, with golden trim and lace sleeves, fur muffs and silk cravats. Pearls shone luminescent from their ears, and diamonds sparkled ostentatiously from their throats and wrists. At the back of the sanctuary, the poorer sect of the congregation stood, faces solemn and dirty, hands clasped. A number of blue-coated chasseurs stood as well, including Jean-Luc. He waved us over. I cursed silently when my husband complied. We stand for the entire service? He eyed me suspiciously.
Have you never attended Mass?
Of course I have. I lied, digging in my heels as he continued to steer me forward. I wished I'd worn a hood. There were more people here than I'd ever imagined. Presumably, none of them were witches, but one never knew. I was here after all. Once or twice. At his incredulous expression, I gestured down the length of my body. Criminal, remember? Forgive me for not memorizing every proverb and learning every rule. Rolling his eyes, he pushed me the final few steps.
Chasseurs stand as an act of humility.
But I'm not a chasseur.
And praise God for that.
Jean-Luc stepped aside to make room for us, and my domineering husband forced me between them. They clasped forearms with tense smiles.
I didn't know if you'd be joining us, given the fiasco this afternoon. How did His Eminence handle the news?
He didn't blame us.
Who did he blame, then?
My husband's eyes flicked to me for the briefest of seconds before returning to Jean-Luc's.
The initiates on duty. They've been relieved of their positions.
Rightfully so.
I knew better than to correct him. Fortunately, their conversation ended when the congregation stood and began to chant. My husband and Jean-Luc joined in seamlessly as the Archbishop and his attendants entered the sanctuary, proceeded up the aisle, and bowed to the altar. Bewildered and unable to comprehend a word of their dreary ballad, I made up my own lyrics. They may or may not have involved a barmaid named Liddy. My husband scowled and elbowed me as silence descended once more. Though I couldn't be sure, Jean-Luc's lips twitched as if he were trying not to laugh. The Archbishop turned to greet the congregation.
May the Lord be with you.
And also with you, they murmured in unison. I watched in morbid fascination as the Archbishop lifted his arms wide.
Brethren, let us acknowledge our sins and so prepare ourselves to celebrate the sacred mysteries.
A priest beside him lifted his voice.
Lord, have mercy! You were sent to heal the contrite of heart, the Archbishop continued. Lord, have mercy!
The congregation joined in.
Lord, have mercy! You came to gather the nations into the peace of God's kingdom. Lord, have mercy!
The peace of God's kingdom? I scoffed, crossing my arms. My husband elbowed me again, mouthing, stop it. His blue eyes bored into mine. I'm serious. Jean-Luc definitely grinned now.
Lord, have mercy! You come in word and sacrament to strengthen us in holiness. Lord, have mercy! Lord, have mercy! You will come in glory with salvation for your people. Lord, have mercy! Lord, have mercy!
Unable to help myself, I muttered, hypocrite. My husband looked likely to expire. His face had flushed red again, and a vein throbbed in his throat. The chasseurs around us either glared or chuckled. Jean-Luc's shoulders shook with silent laughter, but I didn't find the situation quite as funny as before. Where was my kin's salvation? Where was our mercy?
May Almighty God have mercy on us, forgive us our sins, and bring us to everlasting life. Amen.
The congregation immediately began another chant, but I stopped listening. Instead, I watched as the Archbishop lifted his arms to the heavens, closing his eyes and losing himself in the song. As Jean-Luc grinned, nudging my husband when they both sang the wrong words. As my husband grudgingly laughed and pushed him away.
You take away the sins of the world. Have mercy on us,
the boy in front of us sang. He clutched his father's hand, swaying to the cadence of their voices.
You take away the sins of the world. Have mercy on us. You take away the sins of the world. Receive our prayer.
Have mercy on us. Receive our prayer. At the end of my Proverbs torture session, there'd been a verse I hadn't understood. As in water face answereth to face, so the heart of man to man. What does it mean?
It means water is like a mirror, my husband had explained, frowning slightly. It reflects our faces back to us, and our lives, the way we live, the things we do.
He looked at his hands, suddenly unable to meet my eyes.
They reflect our hearts.
It had made perfect sense, explained like that. And yet, I looked around at the worshippers once more, the men and women who pleaded for mercy and cried for my blood on the same breath. How could both be in their hearts?
Lou,
He'd cleared his throat and forced himself to look at me. Those blue eyes had shone with sincerity, with regret.
I shouldn't have shouted earlier. In the library, I'm sorry.
Our lives reflect our hearts. Yes, it had made perfect sense, explained like that, but I still didn't understand. I didn't understand my husband. I didn't understand the Archbishop, or the dancing boy, or his father, or Jean-Luc, or the chasseurs, or the witches, or her. I didn't understand any of them. Conscious of the chasseurs' eyes on me, I forced a smirk and bumped my husband's hip, pretending that it had all been a show, a laugh, that I'd just been goading him to get a reaction, that I wasn't a witch in mass, standing amongst my enemies and worshipping someone else's god. Our lives reflect our hearts.
They might have all been hypocrites, but I was the biggest one of all.
Madame Lebel.
Read.
The next evening was the first snowfall of the year. I sat up from the floor, brushing back my sweaty hair, and watched the flakes drift past the window. Only exercise worked the knots from my back. After stumbling upon me on the floor last night, Lou had claimed the bed. She hadn't invited me to join her. I didn't complain. Though my back ached, the exercise kept my irritation in check. I'd quickly learned counting didn't work with Lou, namely after she'd started counting right along with me. She slammed the book she was reading down on the desk. This is absolute drivel.
What is it?
The only book I could find in that wretched library without the words holy or extermination in the title. She lifted it up for me to see. Shepherd. I almost chuckled. It had been one of the first books the Archbishop had allowed me to read, a collection of pastoral poems about God's artistry in nature. She flounced to my bed, her bed, with a disgruntled expression. How can anyone write about grass for 12 pages is beyond me. That's the real sin. I hoisted myself to my feet and approached. She eyed me warily. What are you doing?
Showing you a secret.
No, 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 she scrambled backward. I'm not interested in your secret, please. Scowling and shaking my head, I walked past her to my headboard. Stop talking. To my surprise, she complied, her narrowed eyes watching me scoot the bed frame from the wall. She leaned forward curiously when I revealed the small, rough-hewn hole behind it. My vault. At 16, when Jean-Luc and I had shared this room, when we'd been closer than brothers, I'd gouged it into the mortar, desperate for a place of my own, a place to hide the parts of myself I'd rather him not find. Perhaps we'd never been closer than brothers after all. Lou craned her neck to see inside, but I blocked her view, rifling through the items until my fingers grazed the familiar book. Though the spine had begun to split from use, the silver thread of the title remained pristine, immaculate. I handed it to her.
Here.
She accepted it gingerly, holding it between two fingers as if expecting it to bite her.
Well, this is unexpected.
La vie éphémère.
She looked up from the cover, lips pursed. The fleeting life? What's it about?
It's a love story.
Her brows shot up, and she examined the cover with newfound interest.
Oh. Oh,
I nodded, biting the inside of my cheek to keep from smiling.
It's tastefully done.
The characters are from warring kingdoms, but they're forced to work together when they uncover a plot to destroy the world. They loathe each other initially, but in time, they're able to set aside their differences and—
It's a bodice ripper, isn't it?
She waggled her eyebrows devilishly, flitting through the pages to the end. Usually the love scenes are toward the back.
What?
My urge to smile vanished, and I tugged it from her grasp. She tugged it back.
Of course it isn't!
I snapped, grappling for it. It's a story that examines the social construct of humanity, interprets the nuance of good versus evil, and explores the passions of war, love, friendship, death.
Death?
Yes. The lovers die at the end. She recoiled, and I snatched the book away. My cheeks burned. I never should have shared it with her. Of course she wouldn't appreciate it. She didn't appreciate anything.
This was a mistake.
How can you cherish a book that ends in death?
It doesn't end in death. The lovers die, yes, but the kingdoms overcome their enmity and forge an alliance. It ends in hope.
She frowned, unconvinced. There's nothing hopeful about death. Death is death. I sighed and turned to place the book back in my vault.
Fine. Don't read it. I don't care.
I never said I didn't want to read it. She held out a hand impatiently. Just don't expect me to develop your weirdly evangelical zeal. The plot sounds dreary, but it can't be worse than Shepherd. I clutched La Vie Ephemere with both hands, hesitating. It doesn't describe grass. A decisive point in its favor. Reluctantly, I handed it to her. This time she accepted it carefully, examining the title with new eyes. Hope flickered in my chest. I cleared my throat and stared behind her at a dent in the headboard. And it does have a love scene. She cackled, flipping through the pages eagerly. I couldn't help it. I smiled, too. A knock sounded an hour later. I paused in the washroom, shirt halfway over my head, the tub half full. Lou made an exasperated noise from the bedroom. Pulling my shirt back down, I opened the newly repaired washroom door as she tossed La Vie Éphémère on the quilt and swung her legs from the bed. They barely reached the floor. "Who is it?"
"It's Ansel."
With a grumbled curse, she hopped down. I beat her to the door and pulled it open.
"What is it?"
Lou glared at him. "I like you, Ansel, but this had better be something good. Emily and Alexandre just had a moment, and I swear if they don't kiss soon, I will literally die." At Ansel's confusion, I shook my head, fighting back a grin.
"Ignore her."
He nodded, still bemused, before bowing hastily.
"Madame Lebel is downstairs, Captain. She demands to speak with Madame Diggory."
Lou wriggled beneath my arm. I stepped aside before she could stomp on my toe or bite me, a learned experience from our time at the river.
"What does she want?"
Lou crossed her arms and leaned against the doorframe.
"Did you tell her to piss off?"
"Lou,"
I warned.
"She refuses to leave,"
Ansel shifted uncomfortably.
"She says it's important."
"Well, then, I suppose Emily and Alexandre will have to wait. Tragic." Lou elbowed past me to grab her cloak. Then she halted abruptly, nose wrinkling.
"Also, Chas, you stink."
I blocked her path, resisted the urge to rise or smell myself.
"You're not going anywhere."
"Of course I am,"
she sidestepped me, scrunching her face and waving a hand in front of her nose. I bristled. Surely I didn't smell that bad.
"Ansel just said she won't leave until she sees me."
Deliberately, I reached behind her, brushing my sweaty skin against her cheek, and grabbed my coat. She didn't move, merely turned her head to glare at me, eyes narrowed, our faces inches apart. I fought the urge to lean down and inhale. Not to smell me, but to smell her. When she hadn't been traipsing in the infirmary, she smelled good, like cinnamon. Clearing my throat, I shoved my arms into my coat. My shirt, still damp with sweat, rolled and bunched up against my skin, uncomfortable. She shouldn't be here. We finished our interrogation yesterday. And a lot of good it had done us. Madame Lebel was as slippery as Lou. After accidentally revealing the witch's true name, she'd remained tight-lipped and wary, suspicious. The Archbishop had been furious. She was lucky he hadn't detained her for the stake, her and Lou.
"Perhaps she wants to extend another offer,"
Lou said, oblivious to the precariousness of her situation.
"Another offer?"
"To buy me for the Belrose."
I frowned. "The purchase of human beings as property is illegal."
"She won't tell you she's purchasing me. She'll say she's purchasing an indenture for training me, beautifying me, providing me room and board. It's how people like her slip through the cracks. East End runs on indentures."
She paused, tilting her head.
"But that's probably a moot point now that we're married. Unless you wouldn't mind sharing."
I buttoned up my coat in tense silence.
"She doesn't want to buy you."
She swept past me with a mischievous grin, wiping a bead of sweat from my brow.
"Shall we find out?"
Madame Lebel waited in the foyer. Two of my brothers stood beside her. Expressions wary, they looked unsure whether she was welcome at this hour. The tower and kingdom enforced strict curfews. She stood calmly between them, however, chin held high. Her face, perhaps once exceptionally beautiful, but aged now, with fine lines around her eyes and mouth, broke into a wide smile upon seeing Lou.
"Louise!"
She held her arms out, as though expecting Lou to embrace her. I almost laughed.
"How splendid to see you in such good health. Though those bruises on your face look ghastly. I hope our gracious hosts aren't responsible."
All inclination to laugh died in my throat.
"We would never harm her."
Her eyes fell to me, and she clasped her hands together in feigned delight. How wonderful to see you again, Captain Diggory. Of course, of course. I should have known better. You're far too noble, aren't you? She smiled, revealing those unnaturally white teeth. I do apologize for the lateness of the hour, but I need to speak with Louise immediately. I hope you won't mind me stealing her away for a moment. Lou didn't move. What do you want? I had rather hoped to discuss it in private, dear. The information is quite sensitive. I attempted to speak with you yesterday after the interrogation, but my escort and I found you otherwise occupied in the library. She looked between the two of us with a knowing smile, leaning forward and whispering, I never interrupt a lover's quarrel. It's one of the few rules by which I live. Lou's eyes boggled. That wasn't a lover's quarrel. No? Then perhaps you'd be amenable to reconsidering my offer. I resisted the urge to step between them. You need to leave. Rest easy, Captain. I have no plans of whisking away your bride. Yet. At my expression, she winked and laughed. But I do insist on speaking privately. Is there a room that Madame Diggory and I could use? Somewhere less... She gestured to the chasseurs standing at attention around us. Congested? At that moment, however, the archbishop stormed into the foyer in his nightcap.
What's all this commotion? Don't you all have duties to it?
His eyes widened when he saw Madame LaBelle.
Helene! What an unpleasant surprise.
She curtsied. Likewise, Your Eminence. I hastened to bow, fisting a hand over my heart. Madame LaBelle is here to speak with my wife, sir.
Is she?
His gaze didn't waver. He stared at Madame LaBelle with burning intensity, lips pressed into a hard line.
How unfortunate, then, that the church locks its doors in approximately...
He pulled a watch from his pocket.
3 minutes.
Her answering smile was brittle. Surely, the church shouldn't lock its doors at all.
These are dangerous times, madame. We must do what we can to survive.
Yes, her eyes flicked to Lou. We must. Silence descended as we all glared at one another. Tense and awkward, Lou shifted uneasily, and I contemplated removing Madame LaBelle by force. Whatever she claimed otherwise, the woman had made her purpose perfectly clear, and I would burn the Belle Rose to the ground before Lou became a courtesan. Like it or not, she'd made an oath to me first.
2 minutes,
the archbishop said sharply. Madame LaBelle's face twisted. I am not leaving. The archbishop jerked his head toward my brethren, and they inched closer, brows furrowed, torn between following orders and removing a woman from the premises. I suffered no such qualms. I too stepped forward, shielding Lou from my view.
Yes, you are.
Something flickered in Madame LaBelle's eyes as she looked at me. Her sneer faltered. Before I could throw her from the tower, Lou touched my arm and murmured, "Let's go." Then several things happened at once. A crazed gleam entered Madame LaBelle's eyes at Lou's words, and she lunged forward. Quicker than a snake strike, she crushed Lou into her arms. Her lips moved rapidly at Lou's ear. Furious, I wrenched Lou away. At the same moment, Ansel leapt to subdue Madame LaBelle. My brethren joined him. They pinned her arms behind her back as she fought to return to Lou. Wait! Lou thrashed in my arms, twisting toward her, eyes wild, face pale. She was saying something! Wait! But the room had descended into chaos. Madame LaBelle shrieked as the chasseurs attempted to drag her out of the building. The archbishop motioned toward Lou before rushing forward.
Get her out of here!
I complied, tightening my grip around Lou's waist and hauling her backward, away from the madwoman, away from the panic and confusion of the room, of my thoughts. Stop! Lou kicked and pounded against my arms, but I only tightened my grip. I changed my mind! Let me speak to her! Let me go! But she'd made an oath, and she wasn't going anywhere.
Chill in my bones. Lou. My throat is weeping. Not tears, something thicker, darker, something that bathes my skin in scarlet, streams down my chest and soaks my hair, my dress, my hands. My hands. They scrabble at the source, fingers probing, searching, choking, desperate to stem the flow, desperate to make it stop, stop, stop. Shouts are echoing around me through the pines. They disorient me. I can't think. But I need to think, to flee. And she's behind me somewhere, stalking me. I can hear her voice, her laughter. She calls to me, and my name on her lips rings loudest of all. Louise, I'm coming for you, darling. Coming for you, darling. Coming for you, darling, darling, darling. Blind terror. She can't find me here. I can't go back, or something terrible will happen. Gold still flickers. It lingers on the trees, the ground, the sky, scattering my thoughts like the blood on the pines, warning me. Leave, leave, leave. You can't come back here, never again. I'm lunging into the river now, scrubbing my skin, washing away the trail of blood that follows me. Frantic, feverish. The slash at my throat closes, the sharp pain receding the farther I run from home, the farther I run from my friends, my family, her. Never again, never again, never again. I can't see any of them ever again. A life for a life. Or I'll die. I woke with a start, my eyes darting to the window. Flushed and agitated, I'd left it open last night. Snow coated the ledge in fine powder, and occasional gusts of wind blew snowflakes into our room. I watched them swirl through the air, trying to ignore the icy fear that had settled in the pit of my stomach. Blankets weren't enough to warm the chill in my bones. My teeth chattered. Though I hadn't heard all of Madame Lebel's frantic words, her warning had been clear. She is coming. I sat up, rubbing my arms against the chill. Who was Madame Lebel, really? And how had she known about me? I'd been naive to think I could truly disappear. I'd lied to myself when I'd worn my disguises, when I married a chasseur. I'd never be safe. My mother would find me. Though I practiced again this morning, it wasn't enough. I needed to train harder, every day, twice a day. I needed to be stronger when she arrived, to be able to fight. A weapon wouldn't hurt either. In the morning, I would search for one, a knife, a sword, anything. Unable to stand my thoughts any longer, I swung from the bed and dropped to the floor beside my husband. He breathed, slow and rhythmic, peaceful. Nightmares didn't plague his sleep. Slipping beneath the blankets, I pressed close to him, rested my cheek against his back, and savored his warmth as it seeped into my skin. My eyes fluttered shut, and my breathing slowed to match his. In the morning, I would deal with everything in the morning. His breathing faltered slightly as I drifted to sleep. A Clever Little Witch. Lou. The small mirror above the basin was unkind the next morning. I scowled at my reflection. Pale cheeks, swollen eyes, dry lips. I looked like death. I felt like death. The bedroom door opened, but I continued staring at myself, lost in thought. Nightmares had always plagued my sleep, but last night had been worse. I stroked the scar at the base of my throat softly, remembering. It had been my 16th birthday. A witch entered womanhood at 16. My fellow witchlings had been excited for theirs, anxious to receive their rites as Dame Blanche. I'd been different. I'd always known my 16th birthday would be the day I died. I'd accepted it, welcomed it even, when my sisters had showered me with love and praise. My purpose since birth had been to die. Only my death could save my people. But as I'd laid on that altar, the blade pressing into my throat, something had changed. I had changed.
Lou.
My husband's voice echoed through the door.
Are you decent?
I didn't answer him. Humiliation burned in my gut at last night's weakness. I clenched the basin, glaring at myself. I'd actually slept on the floor to be close to him. Weak.
Lou.
When I still didn't respond, he cracked the door open.
I'm coming in.
Ansel hovered behind him, face drawn and concerned. I rolled my eyes at my reflection.
What's wrong?
My husband's eyes searched my face.
Has something happened?
I forced a smile. I'm fine, thanks. They exchanged glances, and my husband jerked his head to the door. I pretended not to notice as Ansel left, as an awkward silence descended.
I've been thinking,
he said finally. A dangerous pastime. He ignored me, swallowing hard. He had the air of someone about to rip off a bandage, equal parts determined and terrified.
There's a show at Soleil et Lune tonight. Maybe we could go.
What show is it?
La vie éphémère.
Of course it was. I chuckled without humor, staring at the shadows beneath my eyes. After Madame Labelle's visit, I'd stayed up late into the night, finishing Emilie and Alexandre's story to distract myself. They'd lived and loved and died together. And for what? It doesn't end in death. It ends in hope. Hope. A hope they would never see, would never feel, would never touch. As elusive as smoke, as flickering flames. The story was more fitting than my husband would ever know. The universe, or God, or the goddess, or whoever, seemed to be poking fun at me. And yet, I glanced around at the stone walls. My cage. It'd be nice to escape this wretched place, even for a little while. Fine. I made to move past him into the bedroom, but he blocked the doorway.
Is something bothering you?
Nothing to concern yourself with.
Well, I am concerned with it. You aren't yourself.
I managed a sneer, but it was too difficult to maintain. I yawned instead.
Don't pretend to know me. I know if you aren't swearing or singing about well-endowed barmaids, something is wrong.
His mouth quirked and he tentatively touched my shoulder, blue eyes sparkling. Like the sun on the ocean. I shook the thought away irritably.
What is it? You can tell me.
No, I can't. I turned away from his touch. I said I'm fine. He dropped his hand, eyes shuddering.
Right. I'll leave you alone then.
I watched him leave with a twinge of what felt strangely like regret. I poked my head out after a few moments, hoping he'd still be there, but he'd gone. My foul mood only worsened when I saw Ansel sitting at the desk. He watched me apprehensively, as if expecting me to sprout horns and spew fire, which, in this case, was exactly what I felt like doing. I stormed toward him, and he leapt to his feet. A savage sort of satisfaction stole through me at his skittishness. Then guilt. None of this was Ansel's fault, and yet I couldn't force my spirits to lift. My dream still lingered. Unfortunately, so did Ansel.
Can I help you with something?
I ignored him, shouldering past his lanky form and yanking the desk drawer open. The journal and letters were still gone, leaving only a worn Bible inside. No knife. Damn it. I knew it had been a long shot, but irritation, or perhaps fear, made me irrational. I turned and stomped toward the bed. Ansel shadowed my footsteps, bewildered.
What are you doing?
Looking for a weapon. I scratched at the headboard, trying and failing to pry it from the wall. A weapon? His voice hitched incredulously.
What do you need a weapon for?
I threw my weight against the blasted thing, but it was too heavy. In case Madame Labelle, or, someone else comes back. Help me with this. He didn't move.
Someone else?
I bit back a growl of impatience. It didn't matter. He probably wouldn't have hidden a knife in his little hole anyway, not after he'd shown it to me. Dropping to my stomach, I wriggled under the bed frame. The floorboards were spotless, practically clean enough to eat from. I wondered if it was the maids or my husband with the obsessive tendencies. Probably my husband. He seemed the type. Controlling, freakishly neat. Ansel repeated his question, closer this time, but I ignored him, probing the floor for a hidden seam or loose board. There was nothing. Undeterred, I began knocking at regular intervals, listening for a telltale hollow thud. Ansel stuck his head beneath the bed.
There are no weapons under here.
That's exactly what I'd expect you to say. Madame Diggory, Lou. He cringed in a perfect imitation of my husband.
Louise, then, no!
I whipped my head around to glare at him in the dark space, cracking my head against the frame and swearing violently.
Not Louise! Now move! I'm coming out!
He blinked in confusion at the reprimand, but scrambled back regardless. I crawled out after him. There was an awkward pause.
I don't know why you're so frightened of Madame Labelle, he said finally. But I assure you,
I'm not frightened of Madame Labelle.
The someone else, then?
His brows dipped together as he tried to make sense of my mood. My scowl softened, but only infinitesimally. Though Ansel had attempted to remain distant after our disaster in the library 2 days ago, his efforts had proved futile, mostly because I wouldn't allow it. Beyond Coco, he was the only person in this wretched tower I liked.
Liar.
Shut up. There is no one else, I lied. But you can't be too careful. Not that I don't trust your superior fighting skills, Ansel, but I'd rather not leave my safety up to, well, you. His confusion changed to hurt, then anger.
I can handle myself.
Agree to disagree.
You're not getting a weapon.
I hauled myself to my feet and brushed a non-existent speck of dirt from my pants.
We'll see about that.
Where did my unfortunate husband run off to? I need to speak with him.
He won't give you one either. He's the one who hid them in the first place. Aha!
I threw a triumphant finger in the air, and his eyes widened as I advanced on him.
So he did hide them. Where are they, Ansel?
I jabbed his chest with my finger.
Tell me.
He swatted at my hand and stumbled backward.
I don't know where he put them, so don't poke at me.
I poked him again, just for the hell of it.
Ouch!
He rubbed the spot angrily.
I said I don't know, okay? I don't know.
I dropped my finger, suddenly feeling much better. I chuckled despite myself.
Right, I believe you now. Let's go find my husband.
Without another word, I turned on my heel and marched out the door. Ansel sighed in resignation before following suit.
Reed isn't going to like this, he grumbled. Besides, I don't even know where he is.
Well, what is it you all usually do during the day? I made to pull open the door to the stairwell, but Ansel caught it and held it open for me.
Okay, I didn't just like him. I adored him.
A short pause followed as Ansel considered whether I was serious about continuing my big-breasted ballad. He must have decided I was, wisely, because he soon shook his head and muttered,
"He's probably in the council room."
Excellent. I looped my arm through his and bumped his hip playfully. He tensed at the contact.
Lead the way!
To my frustration, my husband wasn't in the council room. Instead, another chasseur turned to greet me. His close-cropped black hair gleamed in the candlelight, and his pale green eyes, striking against his bronze face, narrowed when they found mine. I fought back a frown. Jean-Luc.
Good morning, thief.
He recovered his composure quickly, sweeping into a deep bow.
What can I do for you?
Jean-Luc wore his emotions as plainly as his beard, so it had been easy to recognize his weakness. Though he masqueraded under pretense of friendship, I recognized jealousy when I saw it, especially the festering kind. Unfortunately, I had no time to play today. I'm looking for my husband, I said, already backing out of the room. But I see he isn't here. If you'll excuse me.
Nonsense!
He pushed away the papers he'd been examining and stretched leisurely.
Stay a while. I need a break anyway.
And how exactly can I help with that? He leaned back against the table and crossed his arms.
What do you need from our dear captain?
A knife. He chuckled, running a hand down his jaw.
Persuasive as you are, it's highly unlikely even you will be able to procure a weapon here. The Archbishop seems to think you're dangerous. Reed, as always, interprets His Eminence's opinion as the word of God.
Ansel moved farther into the room. His eyes narrowed.
You shouldn't speak that way about Captain Diggory.
Jean-Luc inclined his head with a mocking smile.
I speak only